Thought Bubble Audio.
Hi and welcome to Supergirl TV Talk, the podcast devoted to the CW's hit series, Supergirl. Still kind of not used to saying CW. I'm Frank, and with me, as always, is my good friend, Tim.
That threw me off, the CW, because I'm so used to you saying CBS, it didn't sound quite right, and yet it sounded perfect.
It sounds so right, yet so wrong. Well, we're back. Didn't expect to be back
again.
Quite so soon. Ah. Yeah, we're back again, this time to talk to a very good friend of the show, I think it's safe to say, Larry Tang, a co-executive producer and director on several episodes of Supergirl in Season 1. And we had an awesome talk with him and really excited to hear about all his insights into the past season and a couple of things about the upcoming season as well. But he's a great guy and really excited to bring you guys this conversation. He was very gracious with his time and he's been listening to the podcast for quite some time, we found out. So wanted to get him on. Before we jump in here, I want to give a quick thank you to Supergirl.tv, our sponsors. As always, they are back, and they are the great place to get your Supergirl news, your headlines, all the info on the move over to the CW. You know, when the move happened, we saw the article there. When whenever new footage comes out, when new trailers are happening, all this the stuff from the upfronts that happened recently, they were a great source for photos and news and updates and everything coming out of those places, out of those events. Check them out, Supergirl.tv, by fans for fans, and they're ad free. They are just a labor of love. And they are happy to be doing it, and we're excited to have them on board. You know, continue to have them on board. Looking forward to season 2 with them, and you know, check them out. Follow on Twitter at Supergirl TV site. Throw them a donation and support the site as well, and help out those guys because they are awesome to us and they're awesome to the fan community. So thank you so much to Supergirl.tv for sponsoring Supergirl TV Talk. All right, you ready to talk to Larry Tang? Ready to dive into this interview?
Oh, I am very ready to. Read talk about a thing that I talked about. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
All right,
play the thing.
Roll a tape.
We are delighted to be joined on Supergirl TV Talk by Supergirl co-executive producer and director Larry Tang. How are you today?
I'm great, guys. How are you?
Oh, very good. Very good. Thanks so much for joining us. We're going to start. I want to, before we talk about Supergirl, I want to go all the way back to how you got started in the industry, and I kind of want to work our way up to Supergirl. So real briefly, can you tell us how you got started?
I think my first industry job was a PA on Titanic. That was in 1997.
Cool.
I was 20 years old. I dropped a necklace in the ocean. That was my fake fame chain.
Nice.
And from there, I went to New York. I was doing storyboards for an MTV animation show called Celebrity Deathmatch, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah. Celebrity Deathmatch was
absolutely
awesome.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that was a very brief stint. And then I got a job working in post-production. It was a show called Now and Again. It was on CBS. It was written by and created by Glenn Gordon Caron, who created the show Moonlighting.
Mm-hmm.
It was a Friday night sci-fi romance show. It was probably pretty much ahead of its time. But it was with Eric Close and Martin Cullen. And so I started working as a post PA on that show, and I kind of moved my way up there. And then I produced a show called Ed, which was on NBC for 4 years.
I remember Ed. I used to watch Ed.
Stuckeyville, Ohio. And yeah, it was a good show. Julie Bowen, Tom Cavanaugh.
Tom Cavanaugh,
Flash,
yeah.
That was awesome.
So, that was a really fun run we had in New York, and basically as soon as Ed was canceled, I did the pilot for Medium, and that's the show that took me out to L.A., and, you know, what was supposed to be just a 6-episode pickup turned into 7 years and 130 episodes, and that's where I got my directing break, and after Medium ended, I started freelancing, and started doing Hawaii Five-O's, and Criminal Minds, and Person of Interest, and I worked on Warehouse 13, and I worked on Arrow. I did the Suicide Squad episode there.
Great episode.
This is where I met Andrew. And just bouncing around, and thank you very much. And I've been bouncing around and just ultimately got a job, kind of fell back into producing the show Graceland, which I had a lot of fun doing with me down in Florida. And off of that, I ended up sort of doing my network freelancing run again. Ended up doing episode 7 of Supergirl, which is Human for a Day. It was a great script. And it was nice. I mean, Warner Brothers kind of gave me a choice of shows to work on, and I chose Supergirl, wanting to kind of get back into genre TV. And, the guys liked it well enough that they offered me the producing job in mid-season. And I was really happy to get offered and happy to accept the job. And, with that came two really fun episodes to direct. I did the Fallen episode, and I did the finale episode.
Good episodes.
Great episodes. What was your relationship to Supergirl, comic superheroes before you did all of this?
I grew up pretty much a DC kid. Teen Titans was my jam. It was
good jam. Good book.
Exactly. I had all the Kenner action figures growing up.
Yeah.
They basically only moved at like 4 axis points.
Yep.
I read a lot of Image comics too. I mean, I still have all my Spawns, and I was sort of part of that whole trend. I was like, let's go independent, and just following those guys around, like Silvestri and Todd McFarlane and
Life Allen Lee.
I don't think as a kid and even as a teenager reading comic books, like, did I ever think that I was going to be able to do this as an adult in some capacity?
Mm-hmm. It's the dream job for a lot of us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a dream come true. I mean, even on like an Arrow, to have Deathstroke in my episode, I was just going crazy over that.
Yeah.
And the first time I saw that costume up close, I was like, oh my God, look at this thing. It's amazing. Mark Guggenheim was somebody I had known. I worked with his wife on Ed. She was like a story editor back in the first season. So I'd known Mark for a while. That's how I got that show in the first place. And, just to be thrown into that world and sort of see how much money they had to make these episodes. And I liked how dark it was. And the action was just incredible. And having done the Hawaii Five-0, I thought Arrow really took, I think, action television to a whole new place. Mm-hmm. Those guys up there, Bam and JJ, they're all really talented stunt coordinators, and it kind of got me excited again. And it's funny, like Flash never sort of fit on my schedule. I just never had a slot for it. But when Supergirl came around, for me it was sort of the first project I could work on that my kids could actually watch. I mean, everything I worked on was so dark before.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, especially with my son, who's just immersed in like DC Lego, for someone that my daughter can sort of root for, and for him to, when I find out I was going to have the Martian Manhunter reveal on my episode, like, I told my kid right away. Yeah. You wouldn't believe what Daddy's doing. And just even like working on that in the early stages and seeing the concept designs for the Manhunter, and just getting really giddy over the drawings and just thinking to myself, like, can we actually pull this off? And we did. And not only that, but the character's staying. It was just a real treat for me. I was reading the script, and I remember coming across Jim in like the first couple acts, and I thought to myself, oh, this would be a perfect episode to introduce Manhunter. And you get to act 4, and there he is. I emailed Andrew, and I was like, I bleeding love you. And he's like, that's why we want you directing this episode. So
that's amazing.
It was literally a dream come true as I was reading the script too. So
that's amazing. And like, To get to direct some of those a couple of the biggest episodes of this season, but then also getting to be co-executive producer for basically the back half of the season, for folks that are not as familiar with TV production, do you want to walk us through a little bit of like what the co-executive producer role, like what that entails, and sort of what you're doing when you're not like behind the camera?
Sure. The main goal for me as a co-AP on the show, on the production side, was just to maintain the quality and then the creative look of the show. Because as it works in television, there's a new director for every episode.
Right.
And it's impossible for any director to do two in a row. The most you could do is every other one, just because usually you're prepping when the other director's shooting. So, you know, whether that comes down to location scouting and making sure we're finding the sort of the scopiest looking places to shoot in, whether that's designing an action sequence that sort of works with the amount of time and budget that we have, or it's helping a director sort of, you know, figure out where the cameras need to go, again, just to kind of get the scene done, or toning a scene with the actors so that, you know, the point of the scene is coming across the right way, or the jokes are hitting. That's sort of what my day-to-day job is. It sort of expands between prep and shoot. I'm not involved in the editing process at all, except for my own episodes.
Sure.
But, you know, with the fight sequences, you know, when I came on board, the big thing for me was, you know, we were trying to get away from things that were less punchy and kicky, and we were just trying to get into more comic book panel moments, as we called it. Mm-hmm. We were looking for sort of bigger events, more memorable scenes, if you will. So, like, rather than having like a six punch combo, we much rather would fight for her hitting somebody and throwing them through a wall or something. Just because I don't think the show earns its keep or its namesake if we don't have those moments. You know, Andrew would always say, like, you know, it's not Supergirl if she doesn't fly. I mean, we have to go out of our way to make sure that those sequences are there, that we get her in the air. It's really easy when you don't have a lot of money or you're short on time to, you know, sort of curb back on those things. But to me, if it's a superhero show, and especially with Supergirl of all people, like, those are the things we have to fight for. And so part of my job was to always sort of fight for that quality, to always preserve that being there. And to find directors who were, you know, able to, again, encourage that along the process.
Sounds like an awesome job.
It does.
When you're directing an episode, what's the process from pre-production to post-production? What's the timetable like? What do you do in each section and so on like that?
When I get a script, normally for any director, you get 7 days to prep the show. We're just scouting and all your meetings and all the budgeting that goes into it. And then on our show, we get 10 days to shoot, which is actually two more than most other shows. It's one more than Arrow. So, you know, a lot of it has to do with her flying. The flying stuff alone can occupy the whole day. Mm-hmm. It's all wire work, green screen. And basically, you know, maybe it takes us about 45 minutes per flying shot just to execute between the rehearsals and getting Melissa up there. Or her double, who's amazing. It's a very time-consuming process. And so we figured out that the only way to get that done is to shoot the show in 10 days. But for me, it's like when I read the scripts, I try to find the emotional anchor first. That's where I start. And from there, I try to create a theme. And then I try to retrofit the script to that. Because I think it's important to always sort of ground the episodes in something that the audience can relate to. I think details are details, but I think emotion is the thing that people can respond to and hook on to. So it doesn't matter if you're a comic book fan or not. I think people understand common themes like betrayal and revenge and love. And I think if I can actually hone in on that, if I can find that, then that's my starting place for me as a director. And I kind of build outward from there.
I can tell you, I watch every week with a non-comic book fan. My fiance doesn't really, she's not really into comics, but she watches the show with me every week, and she definitely, you know, she's able to relate, right? She's able to understand on a human level, you know, who these characters are and what their motivations are, and you know, like you said, like revenge, betrayal, like all those kinds of things are universally human, so she definitely is able to appreciate, even as somebody who's not into comics.
Oh, that's great. I mean, I think that's sort of the whole point of storytelling in general. I think I think you can have an appreciation for the specifics of a world if you're a fan of it. But at the same time, we want people to understand the story and enjoy it and feel satisfied watching an episode, even if they're not diehard comic book fans. You know, for us, you know, we always throw in little Easter eggs and little details just because, you know, it's fun for us. Again, it's sort of, you know, geeky stuff that we do. But, you know, I think for the common fan, you know, we definitely want to make sure the emotional appeal is there. And I think, you know, having Melissa as your number one, I think she's sort of the perfect way in. She's so good in that part. And Kyle, I mean, frankly, they all are. And it's really a joy to work with these guys week in and week out. So, you know, I think we sort of classify the show, you know, at least Andrew does, in the three ways. He says it's always about part humor and scope. And those are the things that we go for. I mean, it's Richard Donner Superman. You know, that's what we want. I think that's what works for the show. I think it definitely works for the character. And you know, that's the guideline. You know, we're not what Zack Snyder is doing. We're sort of the exact opposite of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and gladly, you know, it was an 8 o'clock show. It was family oriented. We knew that we were going to appeal to young girls. We wanted to appeal to, you know, men too, but I think just knowing where we were going to be, who the character was and what time slot we were in, you know, that version made the most sense to everybody.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It's interesting that the heart, humor, and scope, that's cool to hear. I know that over in The Flash, it's like heart, humor, and spectacle. So it's cool to hear that there's that continuity between sort of sister shows. That's really cool.
Yeah, I think with what Andrew and Greg are doing, and you know, Allie on Supergirl, I think that those are the points that we're trying to hit mm-hmm. every week. You know, I think again, the show has to have a certain size to it.
Sure.
You know, we're dealing with iconic characters, and you know, again, those are the things we preach for the show. I think that's what I think if we honor those three aspects week in and week out, then I think that's sort of the product that we want to put out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and a good product it is indeed. You know, you've directed a few episodes now, and of the ones that you did, this might be hard, but you know, do you have a favorite moment to direct, something that was, you know, the most fun, or something that was the most challenging? Does something stand out?
Two, actually, I think. It's funny, each episode I've done, I've had one significant moment, but I think the two that stand out to me are. In Falling, I think when Red Kryptonite Kara is basically dressing down Alex in the loft, to shoot that scene, and we actually rehearsed that scene in advance just because we had some prep to do in that space. But when on the day when we shot it, to see Melissa transform, you know, how you normally see her as Kara into this vicious, biting person who's just so raw and just, you know, saying things without a filter, it was really sort of surprising and powerful to watch. And then to shoot the reverse on Kyler, to see her basically take every word like a dagger to her heart, it was painful and amazing all at the same time. You could see it in Melissa's eyes, and I thought that was a really amazing scene for the girls. And to me, it was one of the better scenes in that episode. You know, and Melissa was really excited just to kind of play something out of character that in that episode. I think she really embraced it and took on the challenge, and I thought she just was amazing and excellent. And then the other one would be Human for a Day, the scene with Tyler and David Harewood. We were in this sort of power converter room, and you know, she's sort of challenging him about, you know, her father, and it was this 4-page scene, and I shot it basically in 3 shots and sort of let them kind of do all the work in that scene. And I didn't even shoot real traditional coverage, really. I just sort of let the camera operators listen and kind of go where their ears took them. But to me, that was, you know, one of the highlights of the year for me. I just, to see Kyler in that moment, to see what she brought to the table, and to know that David just couldn't say anything. He couldn't break that bond that he made to Jeremiah. I thought it was just a really powerful scene also. And it got a little shorter in the final edit, but the full version is pretty incredible.
That is definitely top 3 of my favorite moments of the whole season. So hats off to you. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You mentioned that the dynamic between Alex and Kara and Jean and Alex. Who's your favorite duo to work with when directing? Is it Kara and Kat, Kara and Wynn, Kara and James, Kara and Alex, Alex and Maxwell, Lord? What do you got?
That's a really good question.
Well, I'm a teacher, so you know, I ask the hard hitting questions.
I think whenever you have scenes with Alex and Kara, I think those are the ones where, to me, that pairing is the most electric, because the chemistry between the two girls is
phenomenal.
You know, it's palpable, and it's, to me, it's sort of the heart of the entire series, really. And they're so close outside of work as well that, you know, a lot of the heavy lifting in terms of just bonding with an actor is already there. So when you have these really emotional scenes, or when the content is very heavy, I think those are the moments where, like, people just stop and they listen, and mm-hmm. you watch these two girls act, and they're just so tuned into each other. They're so tuned into who they are and the point of views that they're fighting for, that to me, it's sort of the most rewarding pairing of the show. I mean, there's not a bad pairing per se, but I think that's sort of the most electric for me.
I mean, there are so many.
Watching Jeremy and Grant Gustin too was pretty awesome.
Oh yeah,
they had an amazing chemistry together, like incredible. I actually saw Jeremy Jordan. He did a show in Boston a couple of years ago, right before he got cast. So when he got cast, I got really excited because that's the closest I've ever been to any of them. But I've been able to kind of like watch his reign from what he did in, he was in Finding Neverland in Boston, and then you know, when he went to this, and his range is incredible. And then to watch Grant Gustin on and Glee and be completely different and come to this, and they're just both so incredibly charming and nerdy together. It was awesome to see them.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't on set that day when they filmed that scene, but first I saw that scene, it was in the cut, and my jaw was on the floor. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing, because there are so many beats too that Jeremy had added that weren't in the script. That to me make those scenes. Just like him, whether he's like nudging James or just the excitement he has for the multiverse. I mean, all that stuff was just—it was incredible. and so many of those were just character beats, and those just actors knowing again what their point of view is and what's important to them. And to me, like it was one again. I've never seen come alive so much as it did in the crossover episode.
I mean, you're working with some real, I mean, you know, real professionals right there who really know their characters and really they can get into the headspace of those characters. So you're lucky to be working with some really talented guys.
Absolutely.
Speaking of Jeremy, speaking of Wynn, are you Team Wynn or Team James?
I am team no comment on that.
All right, fair enough. But
there are no losers.
There are no. Everyone's a winner. Everyone. We all win. The fans win. But is there something you were hoping to, you know, things you were hoping to include in season one that maybe just didn't make the cut and missed out?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, for me personally, I thought there was a chance that we could introduce Lobo. We had a very vague reference in an episode, I think, like mid-season. That never happened. That would have been really fun. Because I'm like, who do you get? You get, like, Joe Manganiello and you make him Lobo? I mean, like, you know, it would have been fun to kind of just ponder who that would have been. You know, I was excited when I sort of read the reference. I was like, you know, we all knew who we were talking about, but... you know, it didn't quite happen. But hopefully we'll get a space bounty hunter. That'd be pretty amazing. But, you know, they just announced a movie a few weeks ago, so I have a feeling they're going to keep it out of the TV universe. It's sort of what happens. So
the main man.
Speaking of characters that dancing around characters, we never see a fully realized Superman in the show. But out of curiosity, is there a costume that is designed for the show for him for whenever he's CG or in shadow or you have a stand-in? I'm just curious, like, is there something or is it kind of like, here's your leotard and everyone will know it's Superman and we're done? Because I think the closest we get is his boots.
I have a picture of those boots. Those boots are actually real.
I figured they were. Yeah, good.
They're like a size 11 and a half.
That's my size.
I mean, aside from that, from what I understand, like if we use the fabric, it's the same fabric as her suits. But I wasn't there for the pilot when Glenn shot that silhouette he shot that's in every Saga cell.
Sure, right.
So I'm not sure. And I'm not even trying to dance around it. Actually, I've never really asked the question. The only thing I've seen in person are the boots.
It's okay. Boots are good. All right. I had no follow up to that. I was just curious. Yeah.
No, but you know, for us, I think it's important that we define the show as you know, Supergirl show.
Yeah.
You know, he's obviously part of the world, and we kind of like how he's, you know, peripherally there. But it's important to everybody, I think, that she carries the show no matter what. And, you know, even though she shares the glyph on her chest, I think it's, you know, we have to keep it that way. And I think it's definitely the right move. And I think, again, we keep him alive. You know, we obviously went to the fortress, and we've seen Kallax. And, you know, I posted a photo not a few weeks ago, but, you know, we actually had a crypto dog bowl. But that just didn't make the cut. We actually filmed it. It just didn't make it in.
That's cool.
I think it's the right move. You know, and I don't disagree with the powers that be in that regard.
Yeah, I think it speaks volumes actually to the power of the show. From my own personal viewing experience, that by the time that we got to the season or just about the season finale and everything was kind of hitting the fan, I had forgotten that maybe calling Superman would be a good idea, because in my mind that, you know, Kara would be able to handle it on her own, and that, you know, Superman showing up is not necessary because she has proven herself to be so capable through these at that point 17 or 18 episodes that it wasn't necessary for him to be there. And so it was almost like a nice, like, little Easter egg, like, oh, there he is. Oh, there, goodbye now. But I think everybody on the show has done such a good job at validating the show, just like for her to have her own, and it to be of consequence, showing like, okay, we don't need Superman. Goodbye. Go away. You know, which is great. Yeah.
I also think with Jimmy's existence in our world, I mean, I think we forget this sometimes, but, you know, he's there because he made a promise to Clark that he'd look after her.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of why he's there in the first place. And, you know, mm-hmm. I think to me, he's always a constant reminder that Superman does exist in this world. I mean, he's Jimmy Olsen. So, you know, again, I thought it was smarter for them to introduce him as a principal character within the series itself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. Is this? It takes kind of a whole village to raise a television show, but is there something that you can definitively call your own on the show that you're proud of? Like, this is something that I brought, and it's there. It's on screen, and I'm happy it's there.
That's interesting. I think if you, from a directing standpoint, I think if you look at what Glenn did with the pilot, and every subsequent director after that, and certainly, you know, there's a few of us that have done more than one. You know, we kind of build off each other, right? I mean, especially on the first year show, we're finding style, we're finding what works for the show, we're finding kind of shots that we need to tell the story. So I really think part of that is just we're all sort of building off of each other. I know for me, I felt like just with the amount of content that we had, just every day that we had to shoot, it was, you know, we used a lot of Steadicam in my stuff. And I kind of felt like that's something we kind of added, more of towards the back end, just to kind of give it more movement, to tie things together more, and just to give it more of a flow. And again, I think the other thing would just be, you know, in the action sequences towards the back end, again, we just fought for bigger moments.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted, again, you know, more epic, more comic book moments, and you know, trying to maintain that level of scope that we had in the pilot. Again, it's always easy in television to kind of lose sight of that just because of budget, but just to remember it's a superhero show, and then, you know, you can watch gunplay or hand to hand on a lot of other shows. Well, you know, what makes our situation different is if she punches you, you go through a wall. You know, or if you shoot an alien with bullets, they'll spit it out of their palm of their hand. You know, it's like things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just always remind us of those things. And again, I think that's something we just fought for, because I felt like, you know, there was a little bit of a lull in the middle of the season. I kind of wanted to just sort of build off of that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and as we now move over to the CW, we're excited to see that, you know, Heart, Humor, and Scope continue. Even as you change networks, any sort of, you know, structural, like in show differences that we might notice now that we're making the move to the CW? Or?
Well, yeah, the big thing is actually for me is I'm actually not producing next season. I've actually decided not to move up to Canada just for family reasons. I'm still going to direct for them up there.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm going to miss those guys a lot, but, I'll direct one of the early episodes, and I'll direct the finale, and maybe another one. But that's the biggest change is not being able to kind of commit to the move to Canada. It was just too far away, and, it breaks my heart to do so, but I'll sort of do the freelancing thing now for the next few months until I find another producing job. I think... I think you'll see that some sets are the same. I think you'll see some new sets. I think what you know to be the show that will be pretty much intact. I don't obviously know much now that I've taken myself out of that position. Mm-hmm. But I think they definitely have a game plan and they're definitely moving forward with it. And I think it was all just a huge relief to know that the show was getting picked up and that was going to continue on the CW, which is a great place for us to be.
Totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's good. I'm glad to know that you're going to be back directing the episodes too. You know, it's, you know, you're saying goodbye, but not, you know, not completely, which is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, those guys are like family to me. So sure. It was really easy for me just to do that. And, you know, Andrew and Allie and Greg are all really understanding about the choice I made for my family. So I definitely appreciate them in that regard.
That's great.
Of course. It's a show about family and, you know, can't be mad about a reason, you know, your reason being family, if, you know, that's the whole point of the show, you know. Lastly, we have a very important question for you. What is your favorite Cat Grant quote of the season?
Oh, my God.
No prep, I apologize.
I think the Harrison Ford one was too easy. So,
but it's a damn good one.
I really love the run that she had with Barry when she names him the Blur. I think she basically made some kind of reference about how it sounds like a streaker popping out.
Yes,
that's probably my favorite one. But honestly, like, you guys do a great week every, you know, great job every week sort of highlighting them, but, you know, they kill it with her. She's so much fun to work with. She's so much fun to watch. And Calista just understands her part so well. But I think, cause that was, you know, for me, that was one that on paper read funny. And then in person, when she performed it, it was even better.
Mm-hmm.
Also because she herself isn't tuned into that world. So she, I mean, it was a very genuine sort of approach to that line.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably my favorite.
That is a good
choice.
That's
awesome. Great choice.
Acceptable. Yeah.
Very, very acceptable. Listen, Larry, thank you so much for your time. You know, it's been great. I got to say, it was a real honor to speak with you, but you know, throughout the season to get emails from you and as you were listening to the podcast, we were really honored to know that you were giving us a listen now and then. So thank you so much for, you know, giving us that kind of moral support and listening to the show and for coming on the show. Ultimately, we really, really appreciate it. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. Anything you want to plug before we go?
Nothing I want to plug, but I do want to say, you know, thank you to you guys and, you know, grateful for you guys as fans, and you know, your podcast definitely kept me entertained on my drives to work and to location. So, you know, they were definitely long enough to last me a couple of days.
Well, I'm
no, but you guys are very, very perceptive, and you guys are really smart, and you guys, you know, made really good observations, and you know, it was a good way to kind of gauge how an episode tracked, at least for me. You know, because they'd be like, oh, they got that, or they didn't get that, or whatever it was, you know. So you're always curious to see how things are being received. And sure. You guys, you know, definitely helped in that regard. So thank you.
Cool.
Oh, cool. No, our pleasure. Our yeah. pleasure. And when you direct an episode, we'll love to have you back. If you want to come and talk about episodes you didn't direct, you know, feel free to.
Yeah. You guys actually made some kind of vague reference to an omegahedron before we even appeared on the show. And I was like, wow.
Oh, yeah, I think yep.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was literally like 2 weeks before we were going to air the omegahedron episode. And I was like, man. they're clued in.
Clued in, but super again, nerdy, like whatever. Like that. You know. Well, when you go to you want to watch it with some kind of eye instead of just Frank and I being like, we liked it. It was good. All right, end of podcast. Yeah, good job, team. Yeah. So.
Anyway, listen, it was a fun season. You guys are really you guys made it even more fun, and thanks for being part of the fan base, and again, just keep watching next year, and I'll be happy to come back anytime.
Ah, thanks awesome. A lot, man. Thank you for so making much, a show that we love.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, Larry. Nice talking to you.
You too. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye. All right. Well, thanks so much to Larry Tang for his time, because it really was an honor and a privilege to talk to him. Really nice guy, and couldn't have been sweeter and more generous with his time. So thanks so much to Larry.
Yeah. Do you want me to say something again here? No? Okay. You're doing such a good job. I don't think you need me anymore. I think you can. I'm just here to listen on air.
Is that it? Is that what you're here for?
Just here to listen.
Oh, all right.
People will feel my presence. It's fine. You know, what really is that we're recording this while Game of Thrones is on, and I'm like itching to run to the television. So, yeah.
But before we wrap things up here, I just want to also thank our other sponsor, InStockTrades.com and DCBService.com. These guys have been with us for a while now. You know them. You love them. We love them. They are a great, great place to get your comics online, whether it's your trade paperbacks, your hardcovers, or your weekly new issues. You know, Rebirth. Rebirth is starting real, real, real soon. You're going to want to be on top of all this stuff as DC, you know, reboots their universe, and Marvel, and Dark Horse.
They're not, don't misnomer. I'm going to fight them. They are not rebooting their universe. You take that back.
I will not take that back. But anyway,
that's not what they're doing.
Okay. But come on.
It's not a reboot. This is a conversation for another time.
Okay. Toeing the party line. I respect that. But the point is, you can get great comics at InStock Trades and DCBService.com. You know, as Supergirl moves to the CW, we've heard there's going to be more openness to even more crossovers. And one of the, you know, seminal works and a huge crossover was, of course, Crisis on Infinite Earths back in 85 and 86, where you had all of the DC universe, all DC continuity coming together and getting truly rebooted for the first real time. In that story, you know, both The Flash and Supergirl played major, major roles. Barry and Kara both played major, major roles, pivotal roles. I don't want to really say what, in case you haven't read it. It's a classic. You must read it. And you can get it at InStockTrades.com. The trade is normally $30. It's a big book. $30 is a fair price, but 45% off at InStock Trades. $16.49 for this classic, this thing that you must have in your comic library if you are a fan of DC Comics at all. Crisis on Infinite Earths, $16.49 at InStockTrades.com. Like I said, 45% off for this book. You know, they've got books 20, 30, 40, and upwards percent off. And right, you can also check out your digital comics if you like to get those. I know Tim and I are both big fans of digital comics. Just today I was reading, catching up on a whole bunch of Superman comics on Comixology. And you can still do that. And when you're ordering from Comixology, go through DCBService.com and go through their portal, and you'll get 5% off at all your digital purchases, and that'll kind of, you know, feed the fire of your physical comic addiction as well. So it's a great place. Both sites are awesome. We thank them so much. InStockTrades.com and DCB, as in Discount Comic Book Service.com. Thank you so much for sponsoring Supergirl TV Talk. All right, Tim. Well, we've had a lovely day, a lovely chat. And I think it's time to say goodbye to our friends now. So where can people find us on the internet?
They can find us at all the places you're about to tell them.
All right. Yeah, they can find us at SupergirlTVTalk.com, at TV Supergirl on Twitter. Yeah, you can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Satchel, on anywhere, Google Play, anywhere podcasts are found. We will be there. We will continue to be there throughout the summer. Every few weeks, we'll be putting out some new stuff. We've got that upcoming mailbag episode. Keep sending those emails in. We got a few more since the last one, so please keep them coming. SupergirlTVTalk@gmail.com if you want to hear your email right on the show, or leave us a review on iTunes and all the other places. 5 stars would be much appreciated, and it goes far to help us keep the show out there and get in front of new people all the time as the show moves to the CW. So, that's all from Tim and myself. Thanks, Tim, for joining me again for this awesome interview.
I was happy to listen to you do the intro and the outro and some of the interview. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, well, until next time.
Up, up, and away.